It's time to travel to the next room with Jane Asher, an exploration of the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth and what follows. Now, here's your host, Jane Asher, on Empower Radio.
Welcome back to the next room. It's always a good day when I wake up, beautiful day in San Diego, and I get to step outside, take my puppy for a walk. Although she had a little bit of a fit today, she does not like the garbage trucks. And so she saw the trash cans and just stood there in the middle of the driveway. And I'm like, oh, are you kidding? Come on, sissy Lala, we got to go. So it was an abbreviated walk this morning, but she's curled up in a ball down by my feet. And I'm happy to be on the next room today. My name is Jane Asher. Thank you so much for everyone that is following the Facebook page. I appreciate everyone on Twitter. I really am grateful for the new Instagram follows. And I just really am overall just really taken by the community that has grown around the next room. And largely due to the fabulous, beautiful Dying Expo. I cannot thank you enough for getting involved, asking questions, and, you know, registering for the upcoming event. It's going to be November 12th, 13th, and 14th. It's all free. It's virtual. However, I did find out yesterday on our advisory board or marketing meeting that if you're one of the first 300 that register, there's going to be a lot of extra things like tchotchkes and giveaways. So I would just register. And all they're trying to do really is kind of get some pre-promote and a little head count to see the interest involved, but really extraordinary people on board with the beautiful Dying Expo. And the gentleman that I'm going to interview today is part of that. I met Dr. Carl Steinberg a couple years ago when we both got involved with the beautiful Dying Expo. We're now going into the third year. And Carl is here in San Diego with me. He is a geriatrician. He has specialized in palliative care, hospice. He's on the board of, I don't even know if it's an acronym, but it's the California Association of Long-Term Care Medicine. He's been practicing over 20 years in San Diego County and has a deep-rooted passion for the elderly. Let's give it up for my guest, Dr. Carl Steinberg. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jane. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
I'm so glad to have you here. Now, Carl, where on earth did your fondness for the elderly develop? How and when?
Well, when I was a child, I had two grandmothers, and I was very fond of them. Of course, they were probably in their 50s or something like that. We considered that old, I guess.
Not anymore, Carl. Not anymore.
No, definitely not. That's barely middle age, right?
Exactly. Spring chicken.
I had two great grandmothers too. And anyway, I was just always sort of drawn to them and their stories. And I just always was drawn to that. And as I went through my medical training, I also found that I really enjoyed interacting with older people, even though sometimes it takes a little bit longer because they have more complex medical problems, and they, sometimes they're just not fast at telling stories and things like that. But I loved the stories, and I also found that that some of my colleagues, good Lord, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Some of my colleagues did not really like working with that population. Mm. And so, that sort of pushed me into, if there was a new admission that was older, more complex, I would volunteer to take that person. And along with old age comes dying, right? And so many people that I trained with, I trained in family medicine in San Diego at UCSD, but some of my fellow residents seemed to be uncomfortable with people dying, and for whatever reason, I really wasn't, and I didn't have trouble talking about it, and even though I didn't have any special training in it at that time. So I found that felt meaningful to me, right, to be able to have those conversations about something that is so large, right? And that's landed me in geriatrics and in hospice and palliative medicine. where I've spent the great majority of my career over the last 30 years as a nursing home doctor, nursing home medical director, and a hospice nursing hospice medical director and physician. I still make house calls. There's something really special and magical about somebody inviting you into their home, and you get to see so many things that you don't see when somebody comes into your office.
Hmm. Wow. That's good. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm just really, I'm just amazed, because I would think it would be a difficult area to be around, because you are around a lot of dying. And so here you are, it just, it was meaningful to you, and that's where you gravitated. And I love the elderly. I find such a deep wisdom and a gentleness about that stage. And also turning 60 this year, I'm abundantly aware that, my time is now going into that latter part of the hall here, And so I want people to treat me with gentleness and kindness and compassion as I gently age. So thank you for what you're doing. It must be super rewarding.
I find it really rewarding. I'll just say this. It's when you're taking care of people that are in their 80s, 90s, or over 100, and they are getting near the end of life, it's sad, of course, because their life is coming to an end, but it's also natural. It's, we're all going to do it. And for a majority of my patients who are very old, I'm trying to get out of the habit of using the word elderly, because it's got a little bit of a pejorative ring to some people, right?
Okay.
And of course, older people don't really want to be called anything. They don't want to be called older. They don't want to be called, frail, elderly, geriatric, right?
Right.
I'm a couple of years ahead of you, right? And, to think of myself as old, it just doesn't, I look in the mirror, I don't see an old person, right?
Exactly.
But in any event, it's when somebody's reaching the sort of natural end of their life and they're good with it, they're at peace. A healthy person nearing the end of life says, I've done the things that I was meant to do in my life. I'm grateful for all of the things that I've had in the family and the friends and the experiences. But when my day comes, I'll be ready, right? I'm not raging against the dying of the light. So that makes it, professionally, it makes it easier for me. When somebody's at peace. It's a lot harder for me when I'm taking care of a hospice patient, a 45-year-old woman with some, high school kids. And that's very different, right? It's because it seems unnatural. And, their parents are looking at that they're going to be burying their adult child, which is just a horrible thing. But again, we don't get to pick most of the time. All I can do is try to help people have whatever time they have left, be as good as it can be, right? And help walk that path with them. And it's an honor. It's not always pleasant, but it's an honor.
Wow. Beautifully said. How do you feel with everything that has gone on with the impact of COVID in regard to long-term care? I mean, the stories are just incredibly heart-wrenching and so very sad. And we've had a difficult doesn't even begin to cover 2020. And now we're in 2021. And now with the Delta variant rearing its ugly head, what's your take being a physician and what are you seeing?
Yeah, Jane, that is a huge question. I mean, it's just the enormity of it is it's hard to even put in words what I've seen over the last year. A great majority of my clinical time is spent in nursing homes. And they have been, it's been a bloodbath. It's just been awful. A staff member unknowingly brings it in and then it just runs through the facility like wildfire. And you feel so helpless. And probably, you know, one of the cruelest things about it, this pandemic, has been that the restrictions on visitors and so on, and you know, people dying. I don't want to say alone at the bedside, because our staff, and God bless, these literally frontline heroes that have worked in nursing homes, you know, the nursing assistants who barely make minimum wage, it's backbreaking work, and we're so blessed to have them, although there's a huge workforce shortage. But in any event, so I mean, they may be at the bedside when somebody's dying, and but it's not like having a beloved family member, or you know, having your loved ones at the bedside holding your hand, so very difficult for the dying person, but perhaps in some ways even more difficult for the families who are unable to be there through no fault of their own. And that's something that they'll spend the rest of their lives feeling sad about, you know, feeling that loss, that they were not able to be there. Like, I think we all expect to be able to be at our loved one's side, you know, sure, our parents' side when they're dying. And for so many people this year, that did not happen. It's just been, I don't know, it's been really difficult. And I have to say that in spite of all our best efforts, there's so much kind of burnout, maybe that's not the right word, but compassion fatigue and that sort of thing among our frontline staff, that makes it's hard to just say, you know, that it's all going to be okay, or this too shall pass, or because when you're going through it, and nursing home staff care so deeply about the people they take care of, especially the ones who really don't have a lot of family nearby. They're the closest thing that some of these residents have to family. And just to have these series of losses, just one after the other, I think we're really going to be seeing a lot of sort of post-traumatic stress and related conditions in the years to come. That some of it, because we're kind of still in it, and because we've had this crazy, you know, roller coaster ride with one surge after another. And I mean, I can just tell you, November of last year, I was feeling like, yes, you know, we've dodged this bullet, the numbers are getting better and so on. And then, you know, it just went so bad in December and January. I mean, much worse than anything we'd seen up to then. And, you know, now we've come out of that. And here in San Diego County, we were having, you know, our test positivity rates were less than 0.5% for a few weeks. And we were having, you know, 40, 50 cases a day. And now all of a sudden, you know, it's went up to 3%. Now it's 6%. And we're seeing more and more hospitalized people and, you know, 500, 600 cases a day. And it's going up very rapidly with the Delta variant. And I just feel like, you know, it's deja vu all over again. And luckily, vaccinated people, even though they are, excuse me.
It's okay.
I was just tested, so.
Oh, I bet you're tested all the time.
You want? Yeah. Plus, I'm up in the San Bernardino Mountains too, so I'm not around anybody doing virtual visits right now. But excuse me for that. But anyway, yeah, it just feels like things are, it's scary again, and we're seeing that plenty of vaccinated people get breakthrough cases. We've had quite a few nursing home staff who fully vaccinated, and they get mild symptoms for the most part, but it's scary because, you know, they could be asymptomatic and so on. I mean, most of the people that are really sick are unvaccinated people, the people who are going into the hospital and dying. But just the same, if any vaccinated people are going to get seriously ill, it's nursing home residents, and I just don't want to see it happen again. Yeah. So that's been exceptionally difficult.
Man, I have a couple different things. Boy, I'm just full of all these thoughts now. I want to talk about the shortage of your frontline staff, and also what can we do? Anyone that's here listening today, is there anything that we can do to help assist, to, you know, I mean, here these people are giving their time and their passion and their compassion and energy to our loved ones who are stuck away in these, you know, nursing homes, no fault of their own, just simply aging process. And these poor people that are busting their hind ends trying to help our loved ones, our elderly, or whatever you want to call them now.
Our elders, how about
our,
that?
Our elders,
that
there you go.
More like, you know, the
yeah,
wisdom.
More yeah. respect, okay. Helping yeah. our elders navigate maybe some of their final days. Is there anything we can do as a society to help these people? I feel like we need to support them somehow.
Oh, gosh. You know, I wish there was a simple answer to that. During non-COVID times when there's open visitation, of course, volunteering at a nursing home.
Right.
You know, I take my dogs to, you know, you're talking about your dog, and that's been one of the great blessings of my job is I always have a dog or two with me when I make nursing home rounds, except during the pandemic. And for a few weeks there, I was back to taking my dog in, and you know, now I've stopped that again, but I'm sure we'll be back at it eventually. But that brings so much joy to so many people, even though it kind of slows down your day. But as a community member, you know, to volunteer, to if you've got a pet that's appropriate to take into a nursing home to visit, that's one thing that can really really brighten up a lot of people's days. And it's remarkable, really, the way people light up. I took I have a miniature poodle, Josie, that I took to one of my facilities a few weeks ago, and there was a younger woman, probably, you know, in her 40s or so, and had probably been in a motor vehicle accident or something. She wasn't my patient, but I had the dog in the rehab gym, and they wheeled her in, and she just started weeping, and the dog ran over and you know, was getting petted. And I don't think there was a dry eye in the room, and she was just saying, oh, I haven't touched a dog in over 2 years. And, but anyway, so, but that's one thing, you know, you could call local facilities once this is over. In the meantime, though, because of the strict, policies on not letting visitors in,
sure.
Maybe volunteering, you know, could you bring a few pizzas over first?
Good idea.
Or, one thing I'm always known for is I buy, you know, like chocolate covered almonds or raisins at Costco, and I take a bin of those in when I go make my rounds. And of course, if I show up without them, people are like, "Hey, where's the candy?" But you know, that those types of things are something that maybe ever so slightly and incrementally lessens the load and lets people know that they're being appreciated.
Yeah,
and, it is a it's hard work, and it's often not appreciated. And you know, in the, within the medical community, part of the workforce issue is that nursing homes are sort of looked down on, right? It's like, you know, they're not Disneyland. It's not the happiest place on earth. And yet there are so many wonderful things that happen in a nursing home every single day. And there's so much compassion and so much love. That I think people aren't aware of it, but here's what happens, Jane, is what we're, you know, you hire a brand new nursing grad, because basically, she can't get a job at the hospital because she has no experience. She'll work at your facility. He or she will work at your facility for 6 months, 12 months. And then, you know, they apply for a job at the hospital and they're gone. Right.
Yeah.
And that happens with nursing assistants, too, at times. And so it's really hard. It's really hard to get people, good people, and to keep good people. And it's something that the nursing home industry has struggled with for many years. Of course, I think consumer advocates say, well, if the nursing home would only pay more, you know, pay a decent living wage, then they wouldn't have such a hard time getting people. But I think it's more complicated than that. And I think there really are just not that many bodies out there. And there are, you know, I hate to disparage the younger generations, but but I will anyway. You know, many of them are not big on sort of caregiving jobs. They want a job where they can just constantly be told how great they are. And you know, that doesn't happen in the nursing home, right? You've got people with dementia who don't necessarily treat you great. And, you know, you have to do it because you know you're doing something that is of service to others. It can't be about you. So that's my little diatribe on that. But we really need to figure out ways to get more people into that workforce and keep them there.
Yeah. That's a lot to unpack with that. What about, still on the COVID, what about individuals, or what do you say to those that say this is not real and that the vaccination is not the answer? And I run into this daily, and I will not, I refuse to argue about it. I just know what I feel. And, you know, for me, it's doing my part and protecting my loved ones, especially my mother-in-law, who's in her 80s. So what do you say?
Yeah, that's really hard. It's hard because, you know, part of me just wants to, you know, sort of figuratively shake somebody and say, what in the hell is wrong with you? How stupid can you be, right? But I would never do that.
Sure.
That clearly doesn't help anything, right? You know, and I think people are all in their own way trying to do what they believe is right. And so I think, mm-hmm. you know, you have to kind of start with that. And people are willing to believe all kinds of craziness these days, right? And the anti-vax movement is very well organized. And, you know, part of their whole shtick is that there's this big cover up, right? And all the people that are dying of the vaccine that, you know, that is being suppressed. And, oh, every time they, you know, this amazing, brilliant scientist posts something saying how bad the vaccine is, or how, you know, we should still be using hydroxychloroquine or whatever it is, Facebook takes it down. It's being censored. So, you know, it's very hard to counter that because, you know, it's remotely possible that such a thing could happen, you know, so I think that's, you know, you have to meet people where they are. And I'm not going to say that I have a great track record in convincing reluctant nursing home staff to, in fact, take the vaccination, but I have definitely had a decent number of successes. And these successes usually occur in a one-on-one situation, and it takes time. And it starts with listening, you know, what are your concerns? And with nursing home staff, it's a little easier to move the needle because you can sort of use, I don't want to say guilt, but it's just, look, you have chosen to devote your life, your career to working with this vulnerable, frail, you know, wonderful population. You love these people, right? What better way to show that love than give them the gift of getting this vaccine and protecting them from mm-hmm. potentially dying from you bringing it in here? And that sometimes resonates with people.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many, that's a whole nother segment. It's just, there's so much there that that people just, they don't want to get the vaccine for a number of reasons. I'm hoping with this Delta variant that two things happen, that people who previously didn't get the vaccine, now that they're seeing that, you know, literally well over 90% of the serious illnesses and deaths from COVID, you know, hospitalizations and deaths are in unvaccinated people, that, you know, just as a pure scientific fact, might convince some people that it's willing, that they should be willing to take that risk of a vaccine reaction or whatever these supposed unknown, you know, future side effects might be. So I think that's a big part of it. And then also just the fact that this Delta variant is so super contagious that it, you know, it may run through the population much faster, and maybe we actually wind up reaching herd immunity that much sooner. And hopefully then there's not some new variant that's completely resistant to the vaccine or any of those things, but it's been a really diabolical virus and it's really tough. It's tough to predict what's going to happen next. And by the time this airs in September, who knows what will, you know, where we'll be at that point. This may all be some, you know, ancient history by then.
Boy, wouldn't that be a blessing?
Well, depending on which direction it goes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Like if it like all cleared up and everything was great.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Carl. Dr. Carl Steinberg, my guest today, really, thank you for your honesty and your transparency and your heartfelt passion and the work that you're doing. I am you know, just sitting here full of questions for you and just all over the place, I know. But I really appreciate you just keeping it real, Carl.
Thanks so much for having me, and I hope to see a lot of your listeners at the Beautiful Dying Expo, and it's always a treat to speak with you. And I just want to give a shout-out before we end to my dad, who's 87 years old. He's back in the Cleveland area where I grew up, and he's definitely old, elder. He's an elder, but he's still working 4 days a week. He's a psychiatrist, and he is getting ready to take a new board certification in addiction medicine because he's doing a lot of medication assisted therapy for opioid addiction, and he is loving it. And I just the age is just a number. Very true.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of my dad. And I mean, I hope that by the time I'm 87, I'm not working 4 days a week. But I hope I'll still, if I'm alive, I hope I'll still be working a little bit.
I love it. Go, Dad. What's your dad's name?
Joel Steinberg.
His name is what?
Joel.
Joel. Okay. So yeah. Dr. Joel, shout out to Dad working at 87. You know what, though, Carl? I think that that shows he must have a great love and passion for psychiatry and what he's doing. Otherwise, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't have to work, right?
Well, he says he's got a mortgage to pay, but he doesn't have to work.
Okay. All right. Dad enjoys it. So you're not fooling me, Joel.
That's what I tell. That's exactly what I said.
That is awesome. That God bless him. That's 87's great. My dad stuck the landing at 91, and there's not a day that doesn't go by that I don't think about my dad. I mean, he was super, super healthy and kind of checked out of here on his own terms, and did so very quietly. And it was really it was awesome to have him into it, you know, healthy into his 90s. So I can only imagine how you feel about your dad. That's great.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Carl Steinberg, my guest today on The Next Room, Beautiful Dying Expo, November 12th, 13th, 14th. There is a beautiful little banner right on the show page. Just click there. It'll take you right to the website. As I mentioned, you can get involved. I mean, there are going to be tracks about getting your affairs in order. There is going to be a little woo-woo side of things, some holistic care. There's going to be hospice. There's going to be, what else am I missing? There's all kinds of stuff that they're going to talk about this time. Oh, lots on grief, you know, because we're all grieving one way or another. So please join us. It's a beautiful event, great people involved. And of course, you can see I've made amazing contacts for this show through the Beautiful Dying Expo, like Dr. Carl. So, Carl, thanks so much for joining me again today, and I'll definitely have to have you back on.
All right. Stay well, everybody.
Join Jane again next week for The Next Room on Empower Radio as she examines the beliefs, traditions, and personal evidence of connection with those who have moved on to the next room.